Hello, everyone. Welcome to Memory Static, the podcast that digs up the movies you liked to watch when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. I'm your host, Bailey Moore, and I've got something very special in store for you today. The format of this episode is going to be a bit different because this episode is a bit different. I got the opportunity to speak with Gene Rankin and Jonathan Rogers, the creators of Halloween Special, Witch's Night Out, and the Christmas Special, The Gift of Winter, as well as Jimmy Cross, who you may remember if you listened to our Witch's Night Out episode, has been working very, very hard to bring the citizens of Anytown back to our televisions. This very conversation that I had with them is what I am so excited to share with you today. If you haven't already, I highly suggest you listen to the episode about Witch's Night Out first. This conversation in this episode focuses on The Gift of Winter, but there will be some references to The Witch as well. I also highly suggest you treat yourself and watch The Gift of Winter right now. Go do it right now. Go watch it before continuing with this episode. Not only because it is incredibly charming, but you'll have a better idea of what Jonathan and Gene and Jimmy are talking about. The Gift of Winter and Witch's Night Out are most easily available in their beautiful remastering on Amazon Prime. Now, in this conversation, Gene shows me some wonderful drawings of the original concept art for the characters of Anytown. You can see these drawings for yourself at their official website, thegiftofwinter.com. And one more thing before we get to it. Because this is such a special episode, Cullen Moore has arranged an original piece of music to be heard at the end, so make sure to stay tuned for that. He borrows some of the words and messaging from The Gift of Winter rather than being loosely inspired by the special, which is what we normally do. So this song serves as more of an homage to The Gift of Winter and the music of Peter Roshan. That's it. I'm done talking. Without further ado, Jonathan Rogers, Gene Rankin, and Jimmy Cross. So I am here with the creators of both The Gift of Winter and Witch's Night Out, Jonathan Rogers and Gene Rankin, as well as Jonathan's business partner and fellow animator, Jimmy Cross. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to meet y'all.
Very glad to be here.
So let's just start at the beginning. Jonathan and Gene, how did the two of you start working on animation together?
Well, we took a course at Sheridan College. And John did a wonderful little film of his own called Evaloo. It was his idea, actually. Why don't we do a Christmas special? So the two of us sat down. We had a lot of fun making up the story. You know, we weren't sure whether the kids should be orphans or who should be named what. So we had a lot of fun creating it and getting the storyline done and creating the figures. So I have some pictures I'd like to show you.
Oh, absolutely. So did the story come first before the character design?
Well, I think...
They sort of all came together, really.
John would draw away, and I'd draw away, and we'd figure out what was right. So these are the first sketches that were done of the characters. So I think you'll enjoy how silly they look.
So is that nicely?
That's nicely and malicious.
Oh, my gosh.
These were the first sketches. So I think they're hilarious, actually.
They're great. They're
rotten.
And rotten was always purple.
Well, I think we have one of them in another color, but we decided on the colors to suit the personalities. Oh, and this one is Goodly, but we made him blue eventually.
That's right.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh, and this is one of the first ones of Malicious.
Oh my gosh. She's got so many different colors.
Yeah, I know. We fixed it all so that they had, I don't know where their other one of Malicious is, but anyway. And they were all done in design markers that look like this.
Okay, so they're much bigger than regular markers.
The one with the stripe on, it has a point, and this one has a flat nib.
So that gives you ability to use different textures?
Yeah, it does. And the thing is that the way I'm taking over, John, sorry, but I'll just finish this.
Oh, I'm...
Okay.
I still am.
You all are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Thaley, what I did, John did, well, let me start. John drew all the characters, did all the character animation, and he did it all by hand. You know, we didn't have digital. We had an ancient animation camera where you put stuff down and slid it over and clicked, so it took forever. Mm-hmm. It was very low-tech. So John drew all the characters for the film, and he had to eventually work with his arm in a sling because it was so exhausting.
Oh my gosh.
It was a strange sensation. I remember trying to get to sleep at night after drawing animation all day long. I mean, focused, you know. I couldn't see my arm, it was under the covers, but it was glowing in the dark. It was like it was radiating. The strangest feeling. It was really made me feel good, you know. Wow, you know, I'm left-handed, and it served me well.
How long did the whole process take?
Oh, Lord, I can't even remember how long it took us from the time.
It wasn't that long. It was 4 or 5 months, 6 months maybe, before we were all through, yeah. I know it was very compressed because we didn't know what we were doing. So that was
we really didn't. We really didn't. We, think about what we did back then and how difficult it was.
Yeah.
You know,
it was huge fun when I look back on it. Oh, you know, but some of the problems were almost catastrophic. We had this old camera that had a shutter fault, and it put stripes of light across every frame of movie. And we ended up taking it to Hollywood to get a Wetgate CRI to smooth it out. Jimmy, you know what that, no, maybe not. I'm talking film, okay? Oh, you remember film?
Yeah, I was drawing, the guys teased me and said, hey, didn't you used to use charcoal and wood to make all the drawings and stuff? And I was like, yes, I did. Yeah. Basically, I started in the Stone Age of animation as well, and then moved over to digital is what it means.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I did. Animation has been traditionally done up until that time on clear acetate cells. Mm. And I wanted to draw. I wanted to freehand the whole thing and just stream. I had an unusual ability, which I've never found in any other animator. You can start with a single drawing and draw action all the way to the end. I just had a knack for doing it. That's amazing. I wanted to draw. So I found that you could get transparent cells that were lightly frosted, and they would take a grease pencil. So that's how I did the whole thing. We had some help painting because we didn't know how to paint cells. So we got some cell painters, and they painted the back, and then we shot them, and it was fun, sort of. The prospect of doing this video today brought me back some happy memories over the last week or so.
Oh, good.
That's great.
And some uncomfortable, some agonizing memories also. Money, oh my. We were doing it on a shoestring, you know.
What was it we got from CBC? $30,000. And we thought.
Yeah, $30,000 for a half hour animated cartoon.
Wow.
Wow.
Compared to today, the money it would take. I can't imagine doing anything for $30,000.
No. You can only do it if you do it in your living room.
Right.
And yeah, and the camera is on the dining room wall, you know, and you're living in a small house in North Toronto and driving an old car.
That is insane.
Did you do it all from your house?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
One thing you may not have known, Bailey, is their daughter did the voice of Tinder for Witch's Night Out.
I did not know that.
Naomi did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she did the voice. Yeah,
they participated. Ben did a lot of camera work, and he was just this kid, you know, in his teens, but he knew how to gauge everything and turn this and turn that and click. Oh, yoy. I could never quite manage it, but they really pitched in.
How old were they then?
I'm trying to remember, 12-ish and 12 and 13. They're both about 60 now. So
I bet they thought it was so cool to be a part of that.
And you look at pictures of them as kids when they were younger, one is small and one is tender. I mean, literally.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah,
and I turn to Ben, I go, oh, so you're small.
When you first started on it, was it already planned to be a television special?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, we wrote the story and put in the characters and we tried it all out. We made a presentation to CBC in Toronto. And Gene tells me that I pitched the story, but I don't remember.
Well, John, you were on fire. You were dancing around the room and you're doing, you know, telling the story. It was, you were animated, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I know what I can be like, but strangely, I have almost no recollect. I remember the guy that we pitched to, and there was a woman who was there also. And they were executives. I can't remember their names at this moment, but they're very, very patient, open-minded people, and they actually let a couple of kids come in and pitch a half-hour show for their television network. And actually, they were willing to go along with it. And then, and ours was the first one they'd ever contracted, the first animated one, produced in Toronto.
That's so cool. I can say that. Well, I didn't grow up watching The Gift of Winter. I grew up watching Witch's Night Out, but it's always stood out to me as very unique.
Oh, unique. Very unique. Oh, well, good. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I've always loved it.
When I read a review once said it was so bad, it was awesome.
Oh.
Because they enjoyed the show and they liked the wit and they liked the action and the treatment and the look. Everything, but it was just pathetically primitive, and it was so bad it was awesome. And I, you know, that's kind of cool.
Oh, John, tell them about the music, because remember we've got Trump, and
oh, yes.
I love that.
Had a Mellotron that he used for the music.
It was Peter Roshan? Yeah. Young genius. Boy band leader and very energetic and very creative, and he just dove right in. And it was, the whole show was pretty much finished by the time we added music and sound effects and a little extra of this and that, because we met some very gifted people who had experience and technology and the ability to put it into effect. And we made some really, really good friends, as one does under difficult circumstances, you know. Mm-hmm. People get cooperative and helpful. And, oh, I know, we can do this. Hey, can we do that? Are we good? Oh, okay. All right, let's go. And the voices were fun because we did it with the Second City TV people. We used to get a call at the studio from SCTV, which had a theater in Toronto. And say, could you guys come over to our show tonight and bring your staff with you? Because we can't get people in here to sit at the tables and order coffee. And so we'd show up with as many people as we could muster. And we,
including our kids.
Yeah, we brought our kids. No alcohol, right, yeah. So we got to know Gilda and Dan and...
Jerry and...
Valerie Bromfield and Jerry, yeah.
Catherine O'Hara,
Catherine O'Cart. She was a youngster. She was not even in SCTV at that time. She came in after they moved over to the old fire hall. But anyway, that's another story.
Right.
But
yeah, I noticed that The Gift of Winter is Dan Aykroyd's very first IMDb credit, which I thought was really neat.
Oh, really?
So, one of the things that I really appreciate about both Witch's Night Out and The Gift of Winter, and I've always really liked and admired, is how y'all came up with your own original lore for very familiar holidays. And that's like something that I've thought about. Like, it probably started with Witch's Night Out and thinking about that, how I've tried to come up with my own ideas, like how you tack something onto something that's already so familiar, like how Rudolph started in a song and stuff like that. And, you know, how did y'all generate those ideas? Because they're so creative and awesome.
We were not on drugs, that's for sure. we were parents. We had little kids. We had no money. So, there was no extra influence. We just started up, but we sought together and we planned together and we'd finish each other's sentences and we'd come up with ideas that were just bang, bang, bang. It was, we had a great time.
Yeah, we really did. It was a lot of, I mean, it was frustrating, but writing it was a huge amount of fun.
Yeah.
We kill ourselves laughing about what we're going to have the characters do and what their names would be and so on until we settled it, you know.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the names?
Well, it was really sort of a psychological thing, you know, the different aspects of people, right?
Yeah.
You know, the stalwart, opinionated part of us and the little kitty parts of us and the cutesy parts, you know, and the playful parts and all that kind of stuff. So that's really where it came from.
The fun-loving part, I guess, is Bazooey.
Yeah, the fun-loving part. And that was John's creation. Yeah, we sort of looked at, you know, people can be many things. They can be mean and they can be nasty and they can be nice and they can be stupid, you know, all that sort of stuff. And of course, nicely is just overly sweet.
There's an interesting origin for Bazooey's name, because our son, Ben, was in school. And we met his teacher, and Ben was a little bit active, overactive maybe at the time. And she said to me, as his father, she said, "Sometimes he just drives me Bazooey." And I went, "Whoa, there's a name."
Light bulb.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's a really good story.
Yeah, it is.
If you're in creative mood and inquiring and you're open to all kinds of influences, as Gene and I have always been, I'm happy to say it was a wonderful life. You pick up from all kinds of things you don't expect. And it's something pops up and it sort of lingers in your mind and it joins up with something else. But you still have to function. You're still a parent. You still got to buy groceries. You still got to make sure there's gas in the car and stuff like that. It's just old times, really, and very, very, very fond feelings about attached to it. And who knew when we finished The Gift of Winter that we would continue on and do Witch's Night Out and go from CBC in Toronto. And I did the same act, I guess, when I took it to NBC in New York. And they ended up taking me out to the airport in a limo, you know.
We made $30,000 on the first one, right?
Yeah.
The Gift of Winter was $300,000.
Witch's Night Out, you mean?
Witch's Night Out, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's a big difference.
A little more like it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was curious if you knew that you were going to be continuing with the characters into a series of specials going into Witch's Night Out while you were making Gift of Winter.
Well, it's bound to come to mind because it's just logical. Because success on television leads to more and more exposure.
We'll use these characters again for the Witch's Night Out.
Yeah, it sort of evolved that way. We were into them, and the witch, I finally figured out the witch was probably derived from my mother. But anyway, that's not unusual.
Well, the witch is a pretty cool character.
Well, I did have a picture of the first witches we drew, which were just hilarious. Anyway, I think the story goes like this. John drew a witch, and I drew a witch. Do you remember that?
No.
Well, you drew this little squatty witch that looked like Hannah Trefelt. She was cute.
Yeah.
And so I thought, no, she's going to look like Gloria Swanson. So we mostly created the characters together, and John literally did most of the drawing. But with the witch, I didn't like his idea of a witch. So I drew my own witch, and he loved it and took off from that. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that, John? Probably
no. 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 So the witch certainly became me, and I became the witch. Yeah. Oh, a lot of her expression and action and so on is how I felt, you know, how I move and her attitude.
That's true, and you looked like her.
Facial expressions, absolutely. Yeah.
And you animated all her scenes, correct? You did all of her scenes.
I did every animated drawing in the whole show.
Yeah.
And with that kind of money, we couldn't hire any staff. So there's no such, you know, either do it yourself or forget it, you know.
And it's so funny, now that I know him, when I look at the scenes that he animated with the witch, and then there's another character that's in the scene, especially like when the witch is hugging Bazooey and saying, you know, what's your name? Mm-hmm. You could tell his drawing of Bazooey and the witch compared to the other animators that were on that show. So, I mean, those are just things I look at and I could tell.
Oh, yeah.
I could tell. He has a different way. He drew Bazooey a different way, where I think that's why I fell in love with the series, because of those drawings that he did compared to the traditional drawings that the other guys were doing, where they were just like the same characters, but they weren't as organic as what John was doing.
They would draw the first drawing and the last drawing, and then one in between, and then they would draw other drawings in between to make the action fluid and form and all that squash and impact and all that kind of stuff. Nah, I didn't want that. I'd start with drawing number one and just keep drawing another one. And I loved it because they were loose and free and sketchy and expressive. Mm-hmm. Much more expressive than I could get if I tried to break it all down into in-betweens and stuff. It just seemed to make it sort of static. Animation is action.
So Bailey, what I don't know if you understand, but when we do traditional animation in general, a director will come in and he'll draw the first pose, the second pose, and the third pose, and maybe two in between there. And then we have an in-betweener that goes in and fills in all those other spaces.
Yeah.
That's good for staging and positioning, and it's the way to do it. But the way he did it, he went from beginning all the way to the end. So you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the scene, because you're basically putting all of your acting into this drawing, and you're just going and going and going until you get to the end. You're not planning it out. So the result of that sometimes, which happens in Witch's Night Out, it becomes a brilliant masterpiece of expression, because he's expressing the character all the way through. That's why the witch is so alive and she's so in your face, because he took it from the first drawing all the way to the end, and he put all of his soul into that. It's just so much soul in that cartoon because they did it that way.
I will say that both Bazooey and the witch always stood out to me because of the expressive, like not just the face, but the whole body was expressive and fluid. And
I did all the witch in Witch's Night Out, of course, and most of Bazooey, but not all. But there's Jimmy just described the difference beautifully. Yes. Thanks, Jimmy. Yes.
I was curious, because like I'm really excited to be able to talk to animators, because I've been a fan of animation for a really long time, and I've never really gotten to speak with people that have actually done it. I've watched some documentaries, and I've seen like things where people have a mirror in front of them and they're drawing their own faces into their characters. And you said that you were putting a lot of yourself into the character. Did you use a mirror like that?
No.
No.
I just feel that, you know, I'm sure I had facial expressions when I was drawing, but I didn't know. You know, that just goes into the hand and onto the surface, you know.
That's so amazing.
So not only that, but just the thing that blends everything together on both cartoons are the backgrounds as well.
Now we're getting to it. Yep.
Yeah. It's never been attempted before in the way she did it and the way it was done. Let's talk a little bit about that, because a
totally different look.
The backgrounds are beautiful.
Yes, well, they are.
The backgrounds were a lot of fun, because with John's fluid drawings of the characters, sometimes I'd have to do four backgrounds instead of one because he'd have the character moving forward and going back and over to the side. It was wonderful, actually. So I wanted something soft, especially for the gift of winter with snow and so on. Mm-hmm. So I used the design markers and Varsol on this wonderful paper. And I had to draw the scenes all backwards because then I would, when they were done in the marker, I would turn them over onto more sheets of paper and flood the whole thing with Varsol so that it came out soft. And about maybe the second or third print would be perfect. So it would look like this one.
And Bailey, that's all with those markers.
Right. I know, that's incredible.
When she said Varsol, that's a brand name. It's actually mineral spirits.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, well, I've called it Varsol, mineral spirits. Well,
nobody knows what it is, so that's why I'm saying
mineral spirits. Oh, okay. Is that a process that you came up with?
Yes.
Like you invented it? That is so cool.
Totally original.
Cool, maybe. But I would never do it again, and I would never tell anyone else to do it. There's got to be better ways, because the stink of the stuff I used and the mess it made was really something else. I mean, it was a lot of fun and a lot of surprises, but not the best way to do it. I don't know how you can get that kind of look otherwise, though.
Well, yeah, well, now, I mean, it definitely wouldn't look as organic as you did it, but, you know, now we just use Photoshop and there's different programs and things like that, but it doesn't capture the hand-to-paper, the human tool. It's not the same, you know.
No, it isn't.
No, there's never been anything on TV or anywhere else that I've seen that has that special, original, unique look. It really does set the show apart from anything. And Witches Night Out, too, same. Oh, and Absolutely. Afterwards, remember, Jean, you used to come in with pencil and emphasize certain shapes and doorways and things that needed a little solidity.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, once the thing was done, then I'd punch it up with pencil.
Now, these are things that they instinctively picked up, Bailey, doing these cartoons. This is all of them. They didn't taught them this, you know? This is just...
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
See, this is one of the prints, you know, the Varsol mineral spirit prints. And then I've used, looks like it's 4B pencil on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when I went out there to visit them, Bailey, and when I was walking through the streets of Toronto, these are places... in Toronto that she I was like, oh my god, that's the street that Small and Tender walked down. That's the street that they did.
Oh, that's so neat. So,
you know, of course it looks different now, but I was just amazed. I was like, I felt like I was in the world because these are just places that she's...
And she never took a photograph of anything or anywhere. She would do occasional sketches of these buildings or this park or something like that. No, she just stood at her drawing board and it just came out.
One of the things I've just loved is color. I'm a color nut, okay? And I actually designed the color course for Sheridan College years ago. I was commissioned to do it. So I consider myself a colorist, or whatever you want to call it. And I remember John and I would go for drives outside the city just before the snow would arrive. And I would just soak in the colors and the way the trees looked, you know, the way the landscape looked. And it was just there to bring out.
I grew up in Texas, so we don't have much snow. But
only 2 days worth, please.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. No, that's good. Has it been a little while since y'all have revisited The Gift of Winter, watching it?
Yeah. Me personally, yes. I haven't seen it for a long time. I'm going to see it now. I'll see it after we're done here. Maybe I'll look at it. Maybe not. I don't know. I showed it to, there's some students who came to my studio about 10 years ago, and I showed it to them. And I hadn't seen it for a long time. And they said, whoa, this is so cool. And they weren't artists or anything. They were just, I don't know who they are, high school kids. And I thought, wow, you know, this is, it's kind of fresh and different, and maybe it has some merit.
I think it was 2 years ago you showed it at
Birchfield Penny.
Yeah. You showed it there. You showed it at the.
Yeah, but I wasn't there. I was there. I came in after or something, you know.
You came, but the problem was they had this huge screen.
Maybe Witch's Night Out.
Yeah, did they show Gift of Winter?
I don't think so. I think it's been showed at the Castellani at Niagara University.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, Jimmy, you know what it's like. Well, maybe not because you don't make mistakes. But for people, when you don't know what you're doing, like me, and you look at what you did years before, and you say, oh, no, I would have done that better. I would have done it differently. Why didn't I? Oh.
If you didn't do it the way you didn't, I wouldn't be here today.
Right.
Well, I'll say that I just recently shared it with a bunch of my friends, and we got together. And part of the podcast is that I have people talk about the things that we've watched, and they loved it. They thought it was so charming and very funny. They loved the humor in it, and they wished that they had all seen it when they were younger too.
Oh.
Well, maybe now they can see it. They're older, you know.
My sister was texting me while she was watching it. She's like, I really love this. And then she was texting pieces of The Gift of Winter that she thought were really funny the whole time while she was watching it.
Wow, that's nice to hear.
That cheers me up, I'll tell you.
You know, some people, they get caught up in, well, you know, the thing is, and it's still this way where a lot of people, they look at animation, the first thing they think is, okay, Disney or Warner Brothers.
Yes.
And they're stuck into this mindset of everything is supposed to move like this. And they kind of lose the story because they're looking at the quality and things like that. But with this one, it's no more limited than any Warner Brothers or Hanna-Barbera cartoon that was in that time. If you look at the story and look at the situation and these characters, that's what makes this cartoon great and charming. And that's why it's timeless. Both cartoons actually there's a lot of weight behind them. You just have to be smart enough to see that.
I'll say Witch's Night Out has always been one of my favorite Halloween specials. And now The Gift of Winter is a new favorite winter special.
Yes.
Well, that's lovely. Well, there's a Thanksgiving special and a Valentine special that's ready to go into production.
We're getting that together, and we're going to do it the right way. We're getting the right funding and the right backing behind it, because these cartoons, as well as the classics, are going to stay with the family. My job is to protect them and protect these projects. And where I come in, my story is just incredible, how I met these two wonderful human beings. I don't want to start crying, but there's nothing in the world that I would trade this opportunity or this experience for in my life. I'm so proud and happy to be a part of this and know them. And it's gotten bigger than just me watching two cartoons as a kid and just dreaming. And
I remember you called me one time, the first time.
Yeah.
My phone rings, I pick up the phone, yeah. And you said, are you the guy who did Witch's Night Out? Or words to that. Yeah, let's talk, you know. And we just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. Bing, bing. I'm listening to this guy. He knows what he's talking about. He understands. He responds. He's got it. So we talked for quite a while, and many, many times after. And we're still talking. Look.
Well, I pretty much started in animation as a kid. I was drawing as a kid. And when I saw Gift of Winter first when I was younger, it did air out here in the States. And it hit me, but it didn't hit me as much as Witch's Night Out did. Witch's Night Out, I saw that when it first aired on NBC. And immediately when it popped on, the first scene, I see this witch, and I was glued. I was just like, I couldn't stop looking. I just couldn't stop. And through the whole cartoon, there was a lot of mess going on behind us. My mom was screaming in the background. They were trying to make me eat a TV dinner or something like that, from what I remember. But I just could not keep my eyes off of the screen. I just couldn't. And I remember the name Small and Tender from the Gift of Winter one. And I said, this isn't the same thing. And when I saw this, it just... From that moment, I just kept drawing, I mean, every single day, just drawing and animating and trying to, and just dreaming about these people and dreaming about this town and just the even the colors and the backgrounds, it all just caught me. It just something hit me, and it hit me on another level of a human level. I said, you know, being an African American man, I said, how come the world can't look like this, where everybody's different colors like this?
Oh, interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah, they're small and tender. They're brother and sister, but one's orange and one's yellow. Why can't, you know, and they don't even care. They don't care. They're not even mentioning.
Yeah.
No, that's
true. You're yellow. It just connected to that. And it wasn't until years later that it showed up on Fox again when I was a teenager. And I was hooked again. And that's the point where I said, you know, I looked at the credits. I said, I got to meet these people. I gotta find out who did this. And what happened was, once the internet hit, I started typing in their names. You couldn't find really much. It was just, you know, you would see Gene's name, you would see John's name, but that was pretty much it. This is like 98, you know, and I went off to college, went off to CalArts and started my career. And I owe it to them because of that cartoon. And every once in a while I would go online. I get this obsessive thing where I went online, try to look more. You would find a little bit more about them, like their logo would come up and a little bit more about John than Gene. Yeah. And then it wasn't until 2012 that I saw an article. It was an article for like the Maple Leaf something, and they were doing Let's Play Grownups at the time. And it was an article, and John was on there. And when I immediately saw his face, I said, he's in Witch's Night Out. He's one of the characters with the beards. That's him. And I just said, this is all I have. I just have this picture. And I was married at the time. I showed Margot. I said, this is him. This is him. That's all I had at the time, until one day I just happened to just type his name in Facebook. And
never, I had changed my name.
Yeah. This guy shows up, and I immediately, it was almost like a tunnel was around me. I said, this is him.
Oh.
I'm older now, it's him. And I literally just like, you know, like the camera just whoosh, like that. I was like, oh my God, it's him. I said, Margo, should I contact him? She says, yeah, contact him. What will it hurt? Because in my mind, I, you know, like when you don't see your idols at first, they seem like they're huge. I didn't know what this guy was doing in his life. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on with her. And then immediately after I wrote him, I told him, thank you so much for making this cartoon. Thank you so much for inspiring me to become an animator. You know, you guys made this cartoon and it changed my whole life. I love it so much. I just expect, hey, thanks, kid. You know what I mean? Or something like that. You know, a virtual rub on the head. But he immediately wrote me back and he's like, I want to know who you are. Who are you? I want to get to know you. You said you did this and this and this. Who are you? Contact me back. And then I was like, okay, I mean, Margo, should I contact him again? You know, so we went back and forth on emails, and then finally we talked on the phone, and he did the voice of Goodly, by the way, in Witch's Night Out. So I said, oh my God, you sound like an older Goodly. You know, and we immediately just, John, we were going back and forth and just talking, and it felt like I was talking to my older self. It felt like I was talking to just a soul that just belongs with me, you know?
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, I'm a content creator. I'm an animator. I do character designs. I just started directing at the time. And he said, we should come up with some stories and ideas and stuff like that. And I said, whatever happened to the older cartoons? Because they've been out of circuit for almost 25 years. They were just gone. They were just in the memories of kids that were my age and kids that grew up in the 90s on the Disney Channel. And he said, well, I've moved on, and that they're somewhere in a landfill somewhere or whatever. And I just didn't accept that. I said, if I can help you find these things, could I help you? And he said, sure. And he said, do what you have to do. If you can find them, that'd be great. You know, in the meantime, let's come up with some new ideas for Small and Tender and the Anytown group. And no brainer. I've been thinking about these kids since I was 7 years old. So just melting into the story was nothing. He was surprised. He goes, how do you know these characters so well? I said, I watched this thing 20,000 times, you know? So we came up with the other ideas. And then I met Gene, and it doesn't get any better than this. How much more can this get better? And until I found the footage of both films. One was in another state, another was somewhere else. And I'm still thinking to myself, I can't believe this. I'm going to remaster these classics.
Right, yes. You know, I can't remember where you found them.
There was a place in Texas that had the footage, and they were betting on each other, like, who's going to pick this up first? You know, I wonder who's going to sign it, because this thing has been here for almost 30 years. And wow. Then the gift of winter stuff was the CDC just gave it, said, here, you know, this has been here. We're not doing this anymore. So I was able to remaster them and get them colored. And that was a long process to get that done. Yeah. And calling on friends to get some work done and this and that. And doing a lot of drawings to trade in. You know? And we got distribution for both. And it's continued to stay in distribution. And I'm continuing to find platforms and places and things. And actually, they made a little bit of money on the first time we distributed it.
That's you right.
Know, now with the funding process for the new ones, I am playing a lot of catch up because of the loss of 25 years of it not being in syndication and stuff. But I think we're doing very well and we're getting eyes on it. Hence why you're doing this interview right now, because you're seeing things, you're seeing Facebook posts, you're seeing Instagram, you're seeing all these different things that I'm concocting and putting together to build this franchise, to keep it going and keep it going for years and years. I look at myself as a messenger to pass this on for others.
Wonderful.
I think about it, and I was born to be a part of their lives and a part of this thing. It's not necessarily obsession. I'm a part of it. And I was talking to you about this earlier, Bailey, how the universe works and how they thought they were just making a cartoon. And somewhere millions and millions of miles away, they touched some kid. And for me to be where I am now is truly humbling. And I'm still in love and in debt to these two people. And they are a part of my family. And they always will be. And I love them so, so much.
Oh, Jimmy, I just love you too so much, and Margo and all your beautiful children.
Oh, yeah, those kids are amazing.
I love the pictures that you send. But you're a guardian angel or something.
It's something that if I never, you know, like say for instance, we never get funding for new ones, which I'm not accepting. But if we never move anything forward, the fact that I'm where I am now and I'm able to help them and I'm able to join in with them, this is pretty much a big thing in my life. It's my family, of course, my children and my wife.
Yeah.
I adore them more than anything in the world. This is right along with that because it's a childhood dream and it's something that I don't think anybody in this world has ever experienced. I'm very special for that. And it's all due to them and these wonderful characters that I'm just... they're a part of my life. They're just a part of my world. And, you know, Jonathan is just, I always call him my second dad. He's just, I will do anything I can to help them and help him. No one's going to take advantage of them. No one's going to take advantage of these stories. Not as long as I'm breathing.
Yeah, all right.
Huh. Yeah.
It's such an incredible story and so special.
Yeah, isn't
that, it? Yeah, that this is like a childhood dream come true. Like, that's really, really amazing.
It's more than just the brilliant work and the brilliant artwork that Gene did and the brilliant mind of Jonathan and the brilliant mind of both of them. The Anytown stuff has become deeper than that. This is what we're doing is a message to the world. The message of we're humans. We're all people. We're small. We're tender. We're brazooey. We're malicious. We're rotten.
Yeah.
And we're all just people. And they live in a town that can be anywhere, any place.
Yes.
And once we get past that and we look at this cartoon for what it really is, which I'm really pushing for the rest of the world, especially with the stuff we're going through now, we need any town. We need small and tender and rotten and malicious and bazooey to show us that we are human. This is lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
They're messengers and we're messengers to the world. And that's what intrigues me so much more about this thing. That's why I think about it 24 hours a day, because it is, these cartoons are a message to the world.
This is why philosophers come up with concepts like destiny, and life just opens up and makes sense and comes together and creates.
Exactly.
It can also destroy, and we're not doing that. We're not trying to cheat. We're not trying to get stuff. We're doing what we love doing. And we really don't care much about anything else. Jimmy, you don't. You're just doing what you want to do.
Yeah. And this is what I'm also another thing that I'm doing, and you can see that, is that these two deserve to be in the same stratosphere or even higher than all the other holiday specials, like the Charles Schulz stuff and the Bill Melendez stuff. They deserve Absolutely. Their place in the sun, and it's going to happen, and it's happening now. This Witch's Night Out and The Gift of Winter are in your face, and I'm pushing it in your face, and I'm pushing them in your face, because they deserve to be in this category, because it's something that it just deserves to be up there, and it will be. These characters are going to live forever. They're going to live forever.
Yeah. Where are all the places that the specials can be found now?
Right now, we have them on distributed through Mill Creek Entertainment, and Mill Creek is sending them out because physical media is pretty much gone. There's no more DVDs and things like that. But Mill Creek has them on a digital platform now. So we have them on Amazon Prime. We have them on Shout TV. We have them on Tubi TV, Vudu, Google Play, and paid YouTube. And so they're there for now. But right now I'm in the process of looking for bigger distribution and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just keeping those going until we hit hard with the newer projects. You know, it's a long process, especially when you're trying to do an independent cartoon without the backing of a Warner Brothers or a Cartoon Network, who will basically,
Absolutely.
If they're paying for it, yeah. it's not going to be ours anymore, you know? So we're trying right. to do a independent route, and hopefully, fingers crossed, it works. It's just incredible future for what we're going to be doing for these characters.
Well, the remastering looks wonderful. I had never seen it so clear and with so much detail, because I'd seen it on a worn out VHS. So it was really, really great. I saw them on Amazon Prime, and it looks so good.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, and you can actually see the artwork and the brilliant backgrounds that Gene did and the animation. And I literally was in the editing bay when they first put the film to screen. And it was even much clearer than what you're seeing on Amazon Prime. It was really? Actually frame by frame. And I, you know, because I grew up watching the VHS as well. Yeah. But when I first saw it, I was like, this isn't the cartoon. It's beautiful. You know, it just looks so great. And I just literally, the guy was like, are you okay? And I was just like, tears just falling. It's like, I've never seen it look like this. This is beautiful. It's brilliant. You know, so yeah. So
was this on Amazon Prime?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got to watch it on that.
Yeah, Amazon is probably the best place to get to.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more question for everybody. So Memory Static is a podcast about movies that we loved when we were little and impacted us in some way or another. What movie do you have a specific memory watching when you were little that made some sort of impression?
Oh, my. Well, in animation, I remember Walt Disney's Fantasia. And that was, that kind of stuck with me for a while. It was enchanting. And I saw Pinocchio and I saw Snow White.
Yeah, I loved Snow White. I think that was the first I ever saw.
Snow White's beautiful.
Yeah.
How about you, Jimmy, other than Witch's Night Out, of course?
Yeah, right, I was going to say. No, yeah. I probably when I was a kid, I was really into the Japanese monster sci-fi, Godzilla and all that stuff, because my sister would watch that. Probably my favorite movie, let me think, when I was a kid. Oh, there was a movie it's a monster movie. It was with Russ Tamlin called War of the Gargantuas.
Sounds awful.
So there were two Frankenstein monsters. One was green and one was brown. And the green one went around in cities and ate people. And the brown one was his brother, and he was a good one, and he was telling his brother to stop eating people, and the brother didn't want to do it, so they had this big battle out in Tokyo, and they fell into the ocean, and the volcano ate them.
I'm going to have to look that one up. That sounds much fun.
So from that point, I became a big sci-fi Japanese monster fan and kind of followed, you know, that up until I was older and stuff like that. I love the Muppets as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was intrigued with Jim Henson for a while as well, just because of the relationship he had with Kermit. Like, mm-hmm. I felt that Jim Henson's soul went into the puppet. And then when Jim Henson passed, Kermit died with him.
Right.
So,
kind of, yeah. Jim Henson was an originator too. Oh, yeah. And he would use sounds rather than words. You know, ga-dang-ga-dang-ga-dang, and boom, boom, boom. And then these puppets, you know, making no sense except that they were interacting and they made perfect sense.
Right.
It was entertaining and amusing, and it led to more.
Yeah, it's incredible when you use your soul to do these kind of things, how it can affect other people, hence these two cartoons. So
absolutely.
Whoa, this has been a trip.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for taking the time to share with me. And I'm really excited to edit all this together and to get it out there for everybody to listen to, because I think everybody's going to really enjoy listening to all of this.
Well, I do want to see, you know, what all comes of this. It's fascinating. And I'm egocentric, you know.
So. Don't we know?
Are you?
Don't we know? Don't we know?
I thought it was a secret.
Oh my. I thought I was bad.
Yeah, really. Oh, you are bad, Jimmy. Okay, you're bad. All right. Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, everybody. Again, this has been really amazing. And I just want to take the opportunity to personally thank both of you for these really incredible animated specials. I've always loved Witch's Night Out, and now Gift of Winter is another favorite of mine. And it's just been such a pleasure meeting y'all and talking with you and listening to what you have to say. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Bailey. And thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care, right. Everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah.
Bye, Bailey.
Wow, 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 wow. Oh, my gosh. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It was an absolute delight. Now for a quick break. Hyperreal Film Club is a hub for movie lovers. They've got lists and reviews. They've got virtual film series. And they've maybe got podcasts. Imagine a Mad Max movie directed by John Waters. That's unrelated, but it's still fun to imagine. See you at the movies. Follow along on Instagram or online at hyperrealfilmclub.com. Now let's check in with our Zoom party guests and see what they have to say about The Gift of Winter.
Halloween, yeah. Christmas stuff, and winter Christmas magic gifts.
Here I am with the Zoom party. Before we start, I just want to thank everyone for taking the time to join in for this special holiday episode. We've got a similar cast to the Witch's Night Out episode. We have Aaron from Gay Paris, Kate from The Phantom Toll Booth, Chaney, the one true princess from The Frog Prince.
Hi!
Adam from The Peanut Butter Solution, Elle from The Lost Boys.
Hello.
And Cullen from the heretofore unreleased 9th episode of the Memory Static 2nd season.
What? Whatever could it be? Who knows?
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Just whenever I finish editing it. So, Gift of Winter, what is everybody's general thoughts?
It was really fun.
Yeah, I know you were texting me while you were watching it.
I was. I have a few things that I want to talk about, but I'll wait until they come up naturally, I guess. But I really enjoyed it. It was really cute. Do you want a peanut butter sandwich?
I didn't expect to be as emotionally moved as I was by this movie. And maybe it's everything that we're living through right now, but I was like, this is one of the most positive messages I've seen, like a children's show from this time period. I was like getting a little verklempt over the song of just, you know, it feels good when I laugh. It feels good when I cry. It feels good to be me. Like that's, you know, when you work with children, like that's something that you teach them. But I don't remember necessarily being taught that myself as a child. So it was really moving to see that.
Really beautiful message at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have all the characters in a town that I guess this particular winter, they've all decided to gather in the center of town and introduce themselves for the first time.
Again, that's why this movie is so timely. It seems like all of them were isolated and they were like, winter sucks now. And I'm like, you know what does suck now? Winter, because it doesn't snow. Yeah. It hit a little too close to home, and I was like, this is, maybe I just was getting very meta. I was like, this is extremely relevant to everything going on right now.
Absolutely.
Well, and I don't know about you, but from now on, every time I go on a walk, I'm going to dictate it.
Stomp, 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 stomp.
Steppity step, steppity step.
Skip, skip, skip.
The part
skip.
Where they were yelling, tramp, 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 tramp. Crunch, crunch, as they got like less and less into it.
It's really cute.
Going along with that, I thought it was pretty funny how there were no sound effects, only voices. When a door slams, it's slam.
Or cree.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I love all of the sounds in the control room.
Yeah.
I like the trees. The trees are probably my favorite part.
I liked the trees until they started whispering this way. And then I was like, no, don't go that way.
I really liked Maple and Spruce, and I think they're in a relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
I think they're like an old married couple, and I really, really like it.
I like that they dedicated a chunk of time to the one tree waking up the other tree and the other trees being annoyed about it. Like, yeah. They spent more time on that than necessary, but I liked it.
I like how he was snoring because I just thought he was sawing a log in their trees.
Oh,
I had not even noticed that. That is so cute.
I hope that's what they were going for, but...
I learned a little interesting factoid, which some of you might have picked up on as well. And maybe you'll talk about this in the interview. But in this one... Dan Aykroyd plays the voices of Rotten and two other characters. And that's actually his first actor credit on IMDb.
yes,
really?
Yes, it is. Gilda Radner's in this one too.
Which I noticed that it was a different voice actor from the Rotten in Witch's Night Out, which I really like that Rotten, but also it's really cool that Dan Aykroyd was in this.
He was Rotten, Goodly, and Maple, I think.
That sounds right.
How about you, Adam?
I liked it. I always like stories about learning the history, even if it's fictional, behind things. I remember reading the story like as a kid of like the Indian paintbrush, things like that. So getting to know how snow was invented, I think was really cool. And it makes it feel like a magical element. I mean, snow already is, but I thought it was really neat. And I really enjoyed the ending also. I thought the ending was very just positive, and I love the idea of how inclusive it was.
So I think that it was pretty striking. After seeing Witch's Night Out and then seeing this one, it is really evident that they had refined a lot of the style points of the show by the time they did that second special. I mean, Chaney mentioned the animation was different, and I also felt like the story was not quite as beat for beat moving along, like the plot points and character development and stuff. And, you know, by the end of it, I liked it, because in Witch's Night Out, it's all about like how these individual characters relate to Halloween. But then in The Gift of Winter, the entire front half of it is just how awful winter is for all these people, and they're like trudging through this endless snowless cold landscape, and it's so dreary, and they don't need any character development or anything, because it's all just about how bad winter is without snow.
Speaking of snow, I know most of us in this Zoom party grew up in Texas. Aaron grew up in Arkansas, and Elle grew up in Canada. Did you get lots of snow in Arkansas?
You know, it's funny, I did grow up with snow. I went on a big walk around town up to my grandparents' old house that my family no longer owns. And, well, my grandfather's street is off this very steep hill. And when I was a kid, when it would ice and snow, the city would shut the street down because it'd be too dangerous to drive on. And all the families in the neighborhood would come out and we'd all go sledding down the hill together. So it's like one of my favorite childhood memories is like being on my dad's Red Rider with him and like busting ass and hanging out in the snow. And then like my friend Aaron, I used to steal garbage can lids and like toboggan in the park with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You remember there used to be the things that were, they were essentially manufactured for sledding, but they were essentially garbage can lids, and they were flying saucers. Those things, they were fast and dangerous, and you spun as you were going down the hill.
Aaron, you totally picked up on that cue, because I wanted to ask everyone what their first experience with snow was and what their favorite thing to do in this in snow is. So, Elle, what do you like? What did you like to do in Canada?
Oh, what did I like to do in Canada? Well, it was always very exciting when we would first get the big first snow. Sometimes we wouldn't always have snow on Christmas. Like, it would be a warm year, and then the next year it would be like, you get 6 feet of snow. I don't know if I have necessarily like a first memory, only because I was born and raised in the Great White North.
There was snow. Yeah.
The snow in the tundra. But my favorite memory is we lived on a farm, and so my dad would get the big tractor and he'd plow our driveway, but he'd pile all the snow up back, like where we had kind of like this little half court basketball court, and he'd pile all the snow there, and then my brother and I would tunnel through it and make forts.
So cool.
It was a good time. It was like massive. And then he did the same thing at our neighbor's house, and it ended up being like this big half circle around their fire pit. And they tunneled through it and like made this giant fort. And then we'd sit and have campfires and then like hang out in the snow fort.
That is an experience I cannot relate to. How about my fellow Texans?
I think that we should march to the Ministry of Winter to lodge a formal complaint.
I just saw Kate shaking your head. Have you ever seen snow?
I've seen snow. Once about every like 3 years, we get a little frosting. I think my earliest memory of snow was in elementary school. We got like an inch and I was so excited. It was a snow day because in Texas, nobody knows how to deal with the cold weather. So if it drops below 30, everything's canceled.
Yep. That's so interesting because it's the only weather that you can't really hear, and like you can have a nap in the afternoon and wake up and it's Christmas miracle, there's snow outside. When did that happen?
Yeah, I think the first time that I really remember it snowing was also in elementary school, and I remember there was just enough snow to gather on the inside of the fence so I could scrape it off the top and make a single snowball.
That's pretty much what I did in my front yard. I like scraped up as much as I could find, and it wasn't like good snow, which I didn't know existed. It was like icy snow, and I made a snowman that was like that big. Mm-hmm. I was very proud of it.
As you know, Bailey, I don't have the best of memories, so I don't remember our first encounter or our second, probably not even our third. But I will say 2 years ago, I had a little magic moment with the gift of winter. We were doing a show, and at the very end of the show, we have a window, and it starts to snow outside of that window. And it's very lovely, wonderful show. And then we walked outside after the performance, and it started snowing just for us.
Oh, that's really beautiful.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
My first encounter with snow was that Canadian rapper. Do you remember who sang that song, Informer? But yeah, the first real snow, probably like big snow, was I think a couple years ago whenever I went to New York, because we went to the festival for the film, for our film, and we were like, it was a blizzard, and we were more excited about that. Like, we were excited about like the film, but we were just couldn't wait to get out and like make snow angels.
Snow angels I never got into, but that might be because it was always like ice instead of snow.
Yeah.
So in The Gift of Winter, I think there's a little bit more of Marx Brothers like humor in it. Is there anything that particularly stood out to anybody as funny in this?
Yes.
There were a couple times that I laughed out loud.
One time that I found particularly funny, which is what I texted you immediately when it happened. First, I just love Bazooey. Every time he introduced himself, he like, "Hi, I'm Bazooey, a wop a blue a blop bam boom." I mean, I just loved it. He spoke gibberish, but I don't know, the engineering station, I don't know what it was. And the lady was like, you're goodly, right? "No, I'm nicely." "Oh, then you must be goodly." "No, I'm confused." And he goes, "I'm Bazooey. Hi, confused." And what's her face said, "And I'm fed up." I just loved it. It just was perfect. I did a really poor job doing it now, but it was really well done in the movie.
Are you sure?
I will say the one thing I didn't understand about this movie was how nobody questioned Malicious and Rotten about bringing dynamite to a government building.
They didn't tell anyone.
Like, no, but afterwards, like, they're outside and there was like, they're like, where's Tender? Where's Little? And like, they're like, oh, they're going to get blown up. And then they cut to the indoor scene. And I was like, there aren't any qualifications or ramifications for Malicious and Rotten's behavior.
No.
Like, none at all.
I really liked when Nicely is, I guess, building up Goodly's ego. And there's this musical swell. And they're like really into like this dynamic the two of them have. And then Malicious like, that's disgusting. Or something like that.
Yeah, there were lots of little funny, cute moments. I liked it a lot.
I think, you know, you kind of mentioned this, but I kind of feel like we get a better sense of who Bazooie is in this than we did in Witch's Night Out.
Oh, yeah.
He's a kook. I love him.
He also seems to be, like, the most insightful of all the characters.
Well, I love the moment where the lady is like, okay, you go down the hall, then you go up the stairs, and you blah, 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 15th floor. And she's like, you got it? And, of course, Bazooie's like, yep, because he speaks crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But then, like, of course, he forgot, like, yeah. 2 seconds later.
I like the bit where he's talking to the kid, and he's like, well, sometimes being sad can make you be mean. Oh, yeah. Gosh, getting real deep. But it was a very sweet moment. And then, of course, they don't know that Winter is listening. And then he starts to cry, snow.
I thought that was going to be the end of it, where, like, every winter, Winter just cries because nobody likes them. And then that's the snow we get.
Any town wouldn't happen. Like, it wouldn't happen like that. Because, like, I think that's one of the reasons why I like this movie so much, is because it's such a, you know, in a lot of, like, these Christmas specials, you see, like, the mean grump who has to have their ways changed, right? You know, like, in a lot of these Christmas holiday movies, like, there's, like, this redemption story, right? And, like, that's the entire arc. But this movie's different because you're not following the person who gets the redemption story, who gets that arc. And so, like, when you're watching it happen and you're watching Bazooie explain to the kids, like, yeah, sometimes when people are lonely, they just turn mean. It's really beautiful to watch, actually, in this very strange way of, like, watching a character, like, hear this dictation of how people are flawed, and it lets him become comfortable with his emotions.
It's also treating him with compassion, even though he was just kind of dismissive and a grump to everybody else.
But it was really cool to see that, like, an actual, like, act of compassion for the grumpy person, as opposed to being like, but what about the magic of Christmas, sir?
Awesome. And it wasn't the town at large this time, but someone learned something through the children, just like they did in Witch's Night Out.
Yeah, Tender, Lil, and Bazooie are, like, the dream team for, like, changing people's lives, apparently, in any town.
They're going to change the world.
Well, I said the most important question for last. What does everybody think that the witch does during December? She did not come to this town meeting that everyone was a part of.
She hibernates.
She wasn't invited to the town meeting.
I thought she made a cameo. There was one character near the beginning that I thought was the witch, and then she never appeared again. It's like, oh, I guess that was just an extra.
I'll have to watch it again.
The witch is animated differently. Like, she has more detail. She has different colored clothes than, you know, than her actually whole person. I'm thinking maybe she's not quite in the same universe exactly. Mm. Like, she's kind of like a fringe universe that only connects at Halloween.
The witch is probably, I agree with Chaney, the witch is probably sleeping after all of Adam's ridiculous Halloween requests.
But I also have a theory why the witch doesn't show up. She was living in a very drafty house, so she was always cold. But then they came in for Halloween, they spruced the place up. It's not drafty anymore. She doesn't even know that it's winter.
Ah.
No. She's staying in her toasty home, not knowing that it's any different outside.
An eternal Halloween.
Yeah.
I have a bureaucratic infrastructure question. The secretary was very busy. She was obviously busy. She had a lot of buttons and knobs to press and turn respectively. She loved form. She was like A-class bureaucrat. But she wouldn't let them see Winter because he was also very busy directing the winds and such. But then they got to see Winter, who was bored enough to hear a complaint, and he didn't have any knobs or buttons. He just had a slab, and he didn't seem to be doing anything with it. So I want more information about what his job is and, and who deserves the actual credit. Winter.
I think that's a very timely question, Kate. Like for any type of like bureaucracy or government.
What if Winter is just a prisoner of his own problems? That's why he doesn't get any buttons to press.
I feel like we're all a little bit of Winter right now.
Okay.
Yeah. I have lots of knobs and buttons to press.
Okay, well, thank you everyone again for attending this Zoom party, and thank you for sharing your thoughts on the gift of winter.
Loved it.
Until next time, return your videos.
Return your videos here.
Return them. Here. Return your videos, please.
Right here.
Not anywhere else.
Also, rewind them.
That sounds here. Like a great idea.
No late fees. Just return them.
I'm glad you picked up on that, Erin, because in Gift of Winter, there was always that background woman that was like, that's a great idea.
That's a great idea. Like 10 times. I want to be a hockey puck.
It's good to laugh. It's good to cry. It makes me feel so free. It's good to breathe and dream and sigh. It's ever so good to be me. Oh. It's good to insist. It's good to persist. It's good to be strong, to admit that you're wrong. It's ever so good to be, ever so good to be, ever so good to be me. It's good to have guts, or to be kinda nuts. It's good to be jolly, and a little bit naughty. It's ever so good to be, ever so good to be, ever so good to be me. It's good to laugh. It's good to cry, it makes me feel so free. It's good to breathe and dream and sigh. It's ever so good to be. Or to sometimes be late, to learn from mistakes, to love and to ache. It's ever so good to be, ever so good to be, ever so good to be me. It's good to reach out, to dance and to shout, to say what you think, to play and to sing. It's ever so good to be, ever so good to be, ever so good to be. It's good to be me. It's good to be someone and simply to be.
Thank you for listening to Memory Static, and a very warm thank you to Jonathan Rogers, Gene Rankin, and Jimmy Cross for letting me record their stories and to share them with you. And thank you to Jimmy Cross for making all of this happen and setting up the interview. And thank you to our Zoom party guests. This episode was produced and edited by me, Bailey Moore, with help and editing by Chaney Moore.
The new song was written by Cullen Moore, and you can find more of his music by searching Plaid Tuxedo or visiting plaidtuxedo.com. This is the last short subject episode before resuming with our second season. So I'll see you then. Bye. Bye for now.